I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Later in the hour, we talk with students raising awareness about the impacts of plastic drinking straws on the environment. But first, the story of hope, survival, and family in the decades following the Vietnam War. Mention the Vietnam War to most Americans, and it brings to mind a long, costly, and divisive time in American history. U.S. troops withdrew from the conflict in the early 1970s, but for the Vietnamese people, the story of the war doesn't end there. A new book by Dave Bushey tells the story of a Vietnamese man and his family in the years after the U.S. withdrawal. The book is The World Looked Away, Vietnam After the War, Quoc Pham's Story. Dave Bush and Quoc Pham are joining us in studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So the United States fought with South Vietnam against the Communist North. After the Americans pulled out, the Communist North starts advancing to the South. So, Dave, what happened to the people who remained in the former South Vietnam as the Communists took over?
They were faced with very difficult decisions. Do we escape or do we stay and wonder what the retribution will be towards us? Quoc went through that, and we tried to write a story that would tell what happened to the country through the eyes of one person and his family. Ended up expanding that to his wife and his larger extended family. But they went through a period, what is now still called the 10 dark years, 75 to 85.
How much of what was happening to the South Vietnamese was known to the outside world?
I don't think the outside world not know very much about what happened afterward, because the communists tried to put the fence down, and they wouldn't let anyone in, you know, and especially the journalists or the TV crew. They kept, you know, the world in the dark about what they treat people, especially the South Vietnamese who suffer, you know, under the victor that they call themselves.
And the interesting thing is that we actually didn't pay attention. We averted our attention, so that multiplied the fact that we weren't looking back at Vietnam.
Dave, you served in the U.S. Army right after American involvement ended. What did you learn from the veterans with whom you served?
I learned that it was a painful experience for them, and they couldn't talk about it. They went on with their lives simply because they had to. American society viewed the Vietnam veterans as the bad guys. They were the ones that had committed atrocities in their mind, and they were the cause of the war, when actually it was the government. Mm. It was the leaders that we trusted to take us into a war. So I saw people that had served honorably, that had been wounded, had friends die, and they couldn't talk about it. The night that the Vietnam fell, though, I saw a look in their eyes, and I knew that there was something deep in there. And I saw that same look in Quoc's eye when I first met him.
How did you come across Quoc's story, and how did you approach him about collaborating on this book?
Well, my brother was the captain of the maritime ship. My twin brother was the captain of the maritime ship at the academy, served at the academy for over 30 years. His right-hand man is Quoc's son. And Quoc's son was 9 years old when he escaped with his father into a storm into the South China Sea. Late one night on the bridge, Tom Pham, Hung Pham, started telling that story to my brother, and my brother encouraged him to tell the story and for Quoc to write the story. Quoc wrote the story, and my brother passed it on to me and said, "You've got to write this man's story." And I said, "Tom, I'm busy on other things." Being brothers, we joked with each other. He pressed me and asked me to have lunch with Quoc, and when I met Quoc, something shifted for me. An understanding that this was a story that had not been told.
Yeah. Quoc, your story is a difficult one. Why did you want to tell your story, and why do you think Dave was the right person to help you with it?
I'm not sure, you know, how we headed up, but, you know, I've been looking for an American writer who can write my story, because, you know, the way the American view the Vietnam after the war, that different from what we suffer. And you know, when I talk to the the Vietnam veteran, you know, who been treated badly, you know, when they came back, you know, I believe I should tell the story, you know, that a American here, you know, in Vietnam with the right cause, because, you know, without them, you know, look, you know, what we were treated like, you know, worse than animal, yeah, you know, after the war.
And you were a South Vietnamese naval officer during the war, married with a family. You lived a modest life, but you were comfortable. Describe what was life was like for you and your family.
I've been growing up, you know, during the war. So, you know, that, like, you know, for us, you know, growing up, join the army or join the armed force, that is the matter of fact, you know, we all should, you know, should join the armed force to fight against the communists. You know, my father, he know a lot about the communists. He know how bad the were they, and, you know, we are 10 sister and brother. A half of my family joined the, you know, joined the armed force. Mm. That tell you how much, you know, we love our country.
Yeah. After the U.S. withdraws from Vietnam, the communist North begins advancing into the South. So, Kwok, at what point did you become concerned about your safety?
You know, I you know, a week before, you know, before the war ended, I was in the island, you know, far from Saigon, and, you know, my commander, you know, told me, you know, to go back to Saigon to take care of his family and my family. I kind of hint that, you know, with something bad going to happen, otherwise, why, you know, why he, you know, instruct me, you know, to, he ordered me to, you know, take care of his family. Mm. So when I go back to Saigon, I already have the ticket to go back to the island with my family, just in case something happened. Right, but, you know, a thing doesn't go, you know, at I intended, because I have, because my family, you know, my parents, my wife have different idea about going or, you know, going or staying. But, you know, for them, I need to go. Mm. But for me, I need to stay.
Yeah. Many South Vietnamese flee ahead of the arrival of the communists. Dave, you write about Kwok's dilemma as he weighs the option of staying or going. Do you want to read that section of the book for us?
I'd be glad to. Yeah. And this is where he and his wife are really debating.
What to do.
They make a decision, but then that decision changes later in the book. Kwok's personal options began to take focus later in the evening. Two distinct courses emerged: personal escape, probably with a few family members, or remain in South Vietnam with his family, suffering whatever the consequences that may come. To leave? With whom? And how would he escape? Kwok had no clear direction, no compass pointing towards the North Star. He contemplated possibilities. As he listened to his family, his thoughts drifted. A South Vietnamese naval ship could carry my son Hung and me to freedom. I could head back to Phu Quoc, where we could escape by sea. Alternatively, he thought, a land escape would be more tenuous. There's a war with Cambodia that's beginning to rage, and there's no safe passage, and there's a likelihood of some sort of detention if I enter that country. Kwok's only certainty was that escape could only include himself and possibly Hung. Kim Kung, his wife, could not travel with her infant daughter, Nan, and she was not yet prepared to leave her extended family. Kim Kung contemplated escape as a way to protect her husband from retribution in the event the country fell. Kwok thought of another option: just stay in the country and remain with my family. What that meant was uncertain, but it would mean that Kwok, his wife and children, and their extended families would remain in the country together. His parents had instilled in him the importance of family. It was core to his being. To stay with his family may mean possible retribution, but to leave without all of them was fraught with personal hardship and challenges. Kwok tried to think positively. If he remained in Vietnam, his skills as a naval officer and knowledge of seamanship and navigation might well be in demand. That might override any reprisals that might occur against South Vietnamese officers. But no one knew. His thoughts raced again. They may want me to serve in their Navy or Merchant Marine. They'll need good men. They could decide to punish anyone who took arms against them, though. But that wouldn't make any sense, would it? How do you rebuild a nation if you spend your time on reprisals and retribution? Kwok faced a dilemma he had never contemplated. His emotions wrestled with his logic to discover the best outcome. It was gut-wrenching. The family discussion and debate continued well past midnight. In time, each member of the family was overcome by fatigue and succumbed to fitful sleep anywhere in the house they could find a place to stretch. Finally, only Kwok and Kim Kung struggled with the decision they had to make, hugging their sleeping children as if it was their last day together. The couple ran the many options over and over in conversation and in times of quiet reflection in their own minds. "Sweetheart, I cannot leave you in Nan, but Kwok, if you stay, the communists will punish you. They will be stupid to do that. Kwok, take Hung with you. Get to America or Australia or wherever you can. I'll be safe here with my family until you can send for me, but I can't live without you. And if you stay, you might not be with me anyway. They could send you to jail. You might not survive." The discussion wasn't based wholly on logic. They cried out to each other throughout the evening with tears and occasionally heated words. Kim Kung was being torn apart. She desperately wanted to save the man she loved from any possible harm, and she also knew him, wanted him to continue to live his life with honor. Leaving would be dishonorable but safe. Staying would be honorable but filled with peril. Intuitively, however, Kim Kung felt that Kwok must escape. They concluded that honor was not as important as survival, and perhaps leaving was as courageous as staying. As the glow of dawn began to emerge on the morning of April 23rd, a plan emerged. In the pre-dawn of morning in the country that was still South Vietnam, as a few roosters crowed and the family groggily awoke, Kwok Pham and Kim Kung came to a conclusion. Kwok would escape the country. Husband and wife would each take a child. Kwok with Hung, he needed less care and could now travel, and Kim Kung with Nan, who was still nursing and needed her mother's care. They would separate to provide the best possible chance of survival for each child. It would be a separation designed for survival. Although he didn't know where he and Hung would go, Kwok and Kim Kung felt confident she and Nan would be safe and with family until Kwok could get them out of the country. Kwok and Kim Kung looked at each other. Kim Kung began to cry. Tears welled in Kwok's eyes. They held each other for more than an hour as the enormity of their decision engulfed them. That morning, occasional explosions sounded in the distance. They came from mortars and heavy artillery fired from both sides. They struck both military and civilian targets, often in neighborhoods filled with innocent citizens. But to the communists, no one was innocent in Saigon. They did not know it yet, but the citizens were all considered war criminals, and most especially those who wore the uniform of South Vietnam.
What a difficult situation, Kwok. And you make this decision, but then you change your mind. You can't leave your family. And this was the first of several occasions when you had to make the choice between saving yourself, caring for your family. Total understatement to say this is a difficult position to be in. What gave you strength in those moments?
Actually, you know, that very confusing and very challenging at that time. But for the love of the family, because my father, at that time, he was a chief engineer on a commercial ship, you know, ready to leave Saigon with the family. But, you know, two of my brother was captured, you know, in the center of Vietnam, and my parents never lived, you know, without their children, you know. So that is, you know, a part of the family royalty, you know, to royalty for the family. You know, I finally make decision to stay, you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah. We are talking about the years in Vietnam after the American withdrawal. The book is The World Looked Away, Vietnam After the War, Kwok Pham's story, and we'll find out about Kwok Pham being taken prisoner after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Dave Bushy and Kwok Pham about the book, The World Looked Away, Vietnam After the War, Kwok Pham's Story. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to chime in. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So, Kwok, you are captured and held a prisoner. Tell us about life at the re-education camp.
That is ironic when we call that a camp, but actually that the hard labor jail, you know, in which, you know, but first of all, the communists pretend that, you know, they just send it to the class, you know, without doing anything. But they have a method of, you know, starving us, you know, gradually, you know, a little bit of the time, you know. And in the meantime, they try humiliate us, you know, in any which way they could. That is, you know, to try to, you know, to beat down the guy, you know, by humiliate him until he, you know, until, you know, he gave up on the hope and die, you know.
Yeah. So they're using these techniques to dehumanize, isolate prisoners. So what helped you get through the emotional and physical abuse?
That is the teamwork. You know, we have a team, a good team in there. And, you know, we team up and, you know, to support each other any which way. And, you know, it, you know, like, you know, my team, that is a part of, you know, every, you know, a lot of team in the camp. You know, we come up with a way to support ourselves and to encourage, you know, people, you know, here. The goal is, you know, we survive and, you know, go home.
And how do you feel about those who treated you so harshly in those so-called camps now? When you think back,
I think back that is, you know, that is something, you know, up there, some, you know, we, you know, with faith, you know, without faith, you know, we wouldn't survive. And, you know, with faith, you know, we trust each other, you know, that and hope, you know, that keep us going. Otherwise, we wouldn't survive.
How long were you a prisoner of the North Vietnamese?
Overall, you know, I was like 4.5 years.
Yeah. And how did you keep in contact with your family?
They allow us, you know, to the first visit, you know, with my wife, you know, that like 1.5 years, you know, after we in jail, and it was only a 15 minute visit, you know, without touching, you know, that I, you know, we are a mile apart and try to talk something, you know, and get some, you know, food, you know, to survive in jail. But later on, you know, on the third year, they try to get us to move the family to the new economic zone. So they change the policy and they let the wife, you know, stay overnight with the man. So, you know, one thing in order, maybe they can have baby and they can't live anymore. They have to stay in that area for good.
Yeah. Now, although your wife and children were not in prisons, the families of prisoners didn't have it easy. Describe how the families of the South Vietnamese military were treated by the communists.
That is, you know, we are a jail inside a big jail. You know, the whole nation, you know, the whole South Vietnam was in jail, you know. That's a matter of fact. And they, you know, they have a little bit, you know, they can move, but not freely. If you can move within certain, you know, a certain maybe 5 miles from where you live, you know, if you leave that area, you need to have a passport, you know, some kind, you know, otherwise you can't go.
And towards the end of your imprisonment, you and other prisoners were forced to find landmines. Explain how this was done, and certainly very risky.
At that time, I was sent to the new economic zone, and you know, during that time, I was volunteer, you know, to join the force that to invade Cambodia at that time, and you know. We are the expendable human, you know. So they use us to, you know, to search for mine when they invade, you know, Cambodia. And we are, you know, it doesn't matter how the casualty, because we were criminal, you know, we not, you know, deserve to live, but you know, we die for that cause.
So how did you handle the stress of reliving this trauma as you told your story to Dave?
Difficult. Yeah. Very difficult. You know, I have to stop many times, you know, during that, you know, to recoup myself. Right.
Yeah. So, Dave, the narrative of the book is written by Kwok's point of view, but at times Kim Kwong's the many details in there. So how did you create the dialogue and reconstruct so many of the details?
It's interesting. I think divine providence brings people and together and also gives them the instruments and the tools. I went to the Gestalt International Study Center in Wellfleet and got my coaching certification after I retired as president of Cape Air. And that gave me some tools that I didn't have and some skills and really attentiveness and mindfulness and the ability to let silence do the heavy lifting with somebody like Kwok, who had to talk about things he had never talked about with somebody else. And I think that then allowed me to feel his emotions and to try to put those into words. And then his son, Hung, who goes by Tom Pham, who's an officer at the academy, he put me in touch with his aunt, Dong, who lives up north of Boston. And we, through translations, I was able to find out what was happening with the details back there. And I also talked to Q, his brother who escaped with him, who lives north of Boston. And by talking to them, getting their impressions, I was able to recreate a narrative and then bounce it off of Kwok. Mm-hmm. Is this what would have happened? Is this what happened that night? And there were a lot of iterations, a lot of revisions. I hope I captured it. You never know for sure, but I think Kwok thinks I captured it. What do you think, Kwok?
Yeah, he did a very good job on that.
So describe how you finally escaped the camp and the plan you and Kim Kwong had for your family to be reunited.
Say that again, please.
How you escaped. Talk about how you escaped the camp and then the plan that you had for your family to be reunited.
At that time, you know, Kim Kung, you know, when she visited me in the new economic zone, she made it clear that the communists not, you know, as good as they told us that the so there's some loophole in there, and she said, you know, now you are the man in, you know, in demand, you know, so you need to escape and you need to, you know, follow my plan, you know, to go to Saigon and look for a captaincy, you know, and on the boat, you know. During that time, you know, the Vietnamese allowed the Chinese people to leave Vietnam, you know, on the wooden boat. So, you know, we are, you know, in, you know, the naval officer, you know, professional, we are in big demand, and that gave me the incentive, you know, to follow Kim Kung's plan to escape to Saigon.
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add, Kim Kung emerged for me as a true hero. And Kim Kung, sadly, is not with us anymore. But I came to so admire this woman's strength and her courage. And she would travel for over 2 days one way to visit him in one of the camps. Mm. And she had to barter for food. She had to knock on strangers' doors. And she came up with the plan for escape, and she helped him execute it. This is a love story about two people that cared about family, cared about each other, and cared about survival, and they did it together.
Yeah. Do you think you would have been able to escape if it weren't for Kim?
No
way.
Without her, you know, I couldn't do anything. I didn't know anything about the outside world, you know, except for in the jail, except for New Economic Zone, or except for in the war zone in Cambodia. So, you know, without her, her to be my leader, I wouldn't get to nowhere.
So how many people were hidden on the boat, and what were the conditions like?
It was a brand new boat. You know, we built that from crash. We built that in the heart of Saigon, and you know, we bribe the official. You know, that like we pretend to work for the government. We use the boat, you know, to work for at a ferry, you know, to carry employee, you know, government employee to, you know, Vũng Tàu, you know, to Vũng Tàu, to from Saigon to Vũng Tàu, and, you know, we have to work for them, you know, so we'll be able to, you know, to build the boat, to, you know, purchase, you know, all the thing we need. And, you know, and in the meantime, we test the boat, you know, how it can withstand the rough sea.
So how big was the boat and how many people?
It was 37 footer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the original plan, you know, we have, you know, maybe 30 people on the boat. But, you know, in the process of building it, you know, we need more and more money. So my friend, my close friend, you know, he had to get the money somewhere, and he get contribution, and then he add more and more people, you know. So, you know, tell you the truth, you know, when I was rescued, the EXO, you know, on the San Jose, you know, asked me how many people.
He said,
I just told him maybe 50, maybe 52. And they say, yeah, give me a break, you know. Then tell me, you know, you didn't know how many. He said, actually, we didn't know that. Like, we have five men, you know, the five militiamen added to the end of the journey. So, you know, finally, you know, he had to count people by writing the number on our palm. And, you know, we end up with 55 and say, lucky for you.
Yeah.
You know, if we have, you know, you told me 50, we have 45, you are in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a journalist, a perilous journey. And your seamanship skills and military training served you well. How would you describe the feeling of seeing that vessel respond to your SOS signal and you realize it's a U.S. Navy ship? What was going through your mind?
Thank God.
Mm. Yeah, nearly a million others tried to escape Vietnam by sea.
Yeah.
Not all were as lucky as Quoc. Dave, do you have an estimate of how many Vietnamese perished in just trying to flee and getting coverage in the U.S. press?
The numbers are hard to determine. As I listened to Quoc, I always tried to back it up with research, and there's a huge bibliography and endnotes in there because you need to really delve into to all the facts that are available. Quoc knows many of the facts by lore, but I wanted to find out what sources there were. Over a million people probably escaped by sea. Well over 250,000. Are thought to have died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they didn't have the skills that Quoc had. They were in boats that were poorly built.
Constructed, not in too many people. Yeah. Go ahead,
you know, the first wave of boat people that officially allowed to leave the country, so they end up, you know, maybe a half of them die on the sea. That's why the United Nations stopped that program and say, no, you can't let people go anymore. So that's why, you know, we unofficially, escape from the country, by different way rather than officially leaving.
And you were brought to the U.S. after the rescue. What happened to your wife and children? How long did it take for you to be reunited?
You know, it took 9 years to
nine
get
Nine years?
Nine
wow.
Years. Because I was a ex-convict, so they put a red mark, you know, on my family. They wouldn't let her go until we have the letter writing campaign, you know, from the Methuen High School. And then with the help from representative, you know, Chet Askin, and they eventually, you know, he get to some senator like Sheffield or Kennedy, McCain, you know, they help us, you know, to brought the rest of the family to here.
That must have been quite a reunion.
Oh, yeah, you know, 9 years.
So tell us more about your son, Hung. He followed in your maritime footsteps at Mass Maritime Academy.
Yeah, you know, he the first generation to join the Merchant Marine. My my father graduated from Vietnam Merchant Marine in 1937, and I followed that. I graduated, you know, 1969, and I believe he was the class of 1995. All right, so he followed the footstep of the family tradition.
Yeah. Dave, you talked about kind of putting yourself in Kwok's shoes and you know, really kind of feeling a lot of what he must have gone through as you went through this book. And I think you're both right. This is an important story to tell because this is a story I don't think a lot of Americans really know what happened in Vietnam after we left.
And it's not that we don't care. We just, we kind of breathe a sigh of relief after a war is over. It's not dissimilar to at the ending of any war. After World War II, the Marshall Plan didn't just happen. It happened 3 years after the war. So for 3 years, there was abject poverty and starvation in Germany. And we were only interested probably because of the huge percentage of European Americans here. We didn't view Vietnam the same way. We breathed a sigh of relief. We looked the other way. And that's how the story emerged one day.
Kwok, how do you feel about America's decision to enter the war and your feelings about the government?
I believe the lesson died there. You know, in my opinion, we appreciate, you know, the American, you know, helping us to fight the communists. But, you know, if you come in, you know, and support us on the way, you know, not the halfway, mm-hmm. and then let us die, you know, by ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't fault, you know, the American people. I fault the American government or the Congress at that time. Mm-hmm. They don't think twice about, you know, the people who they left behind.
Yeah. Do you think we've learned any lessons? Kind of seems like we repeated some of that in history since then, doesn't it?
I think that the history repeat, you know, itself, yeah. You know, in many ways. Afghanistan, you know, in, or in Iraq, you know, or something like that, you know, yeah. So. Yeah.
The book is titled The World Looked Away, Vietnam After the War by Dave Bushey with Kwok Pham. Thank you both. And thanks for sharing your story, Kwok, and Dave for telling it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I'm going to mention, you're both going to be at Mass Maritime Academy this afternoon at 1 o'clock, and then you'll both be at Titcomb's Bookshop in East Sandwich tomorrow at 1 p.m. And we'll put details about the book and the book signing at our website, capeandislands.org. Coming up after a break, we talk with two Cape Cod students who would like us to skip the straw.